men who made discoveries relating to how our bodies respond to oxygen have been awarded the 2019 Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine. The Institute says the scientists, two from the US and one from the UK, established the basis for understanding how oxygen levels affect cellular metabolism and physiological functions. And the applications of their findings are already starting to affect the way medicine's practiced.
Convenient for the consumer, a catastrophe, say environmentalists, for the planet. Plastic packaging has taken over the world's supermarkets. But on Monday, Unilever became the latest big brand to say it's going to do something about it. It's pledging that by 2025, it will halve the amount of new plastic it uses, which is a lot. The Anglo-Dutch firm currently gets through 700,000 tons of so-called virgin plastic each year. That's plastic created using raw instead of recycled materials.
UK retailers endured their worst September on record, according to one survey Monday. The British Retail Consortium says total sales fell 1.3% last month compared with a year ago, while average growth over the past year slowed to just 0.2%, the worst figure since the BRC started compiling figures in 1995. Spending on non-food items was badly hit, while spending on essentials was actually up.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's October the 8th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got another business day getting underway here. Lots going on in the world of business. Some updates for you on the strike involving General Motors. There's a lawsuit against the Chicago-based Boeing by Southwest Airlines pilots. And we'll also get to the numbers from the markets around the world here momentarily. But today here on the program, we're going to talk a little bit about strikes, union activity. We have a couple of them in the news. I mentioned General Motors. And we've also have Chicago teachers threatening to walk off the job in about a week or so. Rosemary Fuhrer is going to be here, associate professor of history at Northern Illinois University. She's a labor issues expert, and we'll talk to her about what we're seeing in the trends of labor organizing and unionism, union activity, whether we're seeing fewer or more strikes, and what sense she can make of some of what we're seeing. That'll be first up this morning. A little bit later in the program, it's National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Whether that means being safe on your computers or keeping your kids safe, Kelvin Coleman will be here, executive director of the National Cybersecurity Alliance, with some real solid tips on how we can keep ourselves and our families safer online. All of that's coming up this morning. So first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell will ring this morning on Wall Street after stocks finished yesterday lower. Markets declined ahead of a new round of trade talks with China. This morning, we're seeing a little weakness in the markets as well. Dow futures are off 100 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures are off about a quarter of a percent each. In Europe, markets are all in the red this morning as well. In London, Germany, and France, off anywhere from a quarter of a percent in London to more than a half a percent in Germany and France. And in Asia, as markets get back to work after a number of holidays, in China, up nearly a quarter of a percent. In Hong Kong, up nearly a quarter of a percent. And the Nikkei is going to end the day up nearly 212 points. In Japan, up nearly a full percent. Oil is trading at $52.69 a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. First, Chicago-based Boeing being sued by pilots for Southwest Airlines over lost pay from the grounding of the 737 MAX. The $100 million lawsuit accuses Boeing of purposely misleading pilots about the plane's safety. Two deadly crashes within months of each other forced the 737 MAX to be grounded across the world. Southwest Airlines Pilots Association Union claims that pilots have lost more than $100 million in pay since the grounding. The union also urged Boeing to do whatever is necessary to get the 737 MAX back in the air again. The Kroger will no longer sell e-cigarettes at its grocery stores and gas stations. The company updated its policy yesterday, citing regulatory concerns and safety concerns. It'll finish out the current inventory and then be done with vaping products. This comes as the CDC investigates more than 1,000 lung illnesses nationwide. At least 18 deaths have been reported in 15 states. Kroger is the parent company of Mariano's in the Chicago area. Amazon is unveiling its first Kindle for kids. It's a feature that will automatically provide the definition of difficult words. It'll also turn any word looked up into a flashcard. The Kindle Kids Edition will sell for $110. Pre-orders are underway now. The device comes with a case, a two-year guarantee, and free books for a year. Let's begin front and center this morning. Some labor strife in the U.S. GM, of course, on strike. And Chicago teachers are threatening to go there. Joining us this morning is Rosemary Fuhr, assistant professor, associate professor of history at Northern Illinois University and an expert in labor issues. Rosemary, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Hi. Nice to be here.
You have written a number of different books about unionism, radical unionism in the Midwest, also labor rights and freedom struggles, and you sort of curate the union library sort of at Mother Jones, and there's another website too. So you have all kinds of information about unions. I want to begin this morning with what we're seeing nationally with General Motors. That strike is dragging on, and no sign of it ending anytime soon. What are the dynamics at play with that strike?
Well, it's part of a wave, I think, of rebellion against cutbacks, wage decreases, two-tier systems that have been at work since the 1980s to ask workers to take a hit against in order for corporations to remain profitable. So I think that it's part of a trend that is finally taking on that old canard that workers have to live with less. So I think in that respect, it's similar to the Chicago Teachers Union struggle that, basically says that corporations and educational reform is the solution to everything instead of looking at trying to save this whole public education. So these are both workers asserting their right to strike, which has long been suspect in this country, at least since the 1980s in the air traffic controllers union was, the strike was beaten by Reagan.
Yeah, and have we been seeing fewer strikes over the decades? It feels like we have. I remember when I was younger.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed like there would be a strike almost every year somewhere, and we don't see those anymore.
Well, there's been an uptick, especially in the public sector, which is one of the areas that still has unions. So we've both seen a decline of unions, from the 1970s to the present in the private sector. And then there was a massive attack on public sector unions. Most notable is the governor of Wisconsin basically outlawing collective bargaining for unions. And, that's part of a wave of an attack on unions that came from political and corporate sectors. So now we have a wave of rebellion, I think, against that emanates especially from the 2012 Chicago Teachers Union, which created a style of, striking in the public sector that was bottom up.
Yeah, and I want to focus on the Chicago Teachers Union in a bit, but I want to talk more about this trend nationally. We often hear that unions have been the backbone of the middle class and that they have declined substantially. What does your research show about that? How significantly has that decline been, and how does it impact the middle class?
I think it's about power, and so the unions have been, challenged during what we call a neoliberal era, in which the idea that markets were supreme and you basically have to allow corporations more power. The more power they took, the more they became politically active, politically relevant, and you just see more and more money going to the top and less going to people at the bottom. And that resonates in the amount of power corporations and the private sector tried to commodify education and commodify all public goods. It's like they see nothing that can't be part of the realm of profit making, and it's really hurt the public sector in all sorts of areas. And the idea that the public sector has to take the hit, and that means the workers in the public sectors have to take the hit. And, you know, organizing against that has been a problem because this has come, you know, most of the unions have said, let's just elect a Democrat and that'll help us. And people saw with President Obama or with Rahm Emanuel that it just did not make a difference in their pocketbooks or in their conditions in the workplace. So the challenge for labor, it's just like going back to all of labor history, the challenge has been how do you get community support for fighting back and for making strikes feel like they're part of a solution and not just an irritation. So that's what happened with the Chicago Teachers Union in 2012, is they were able to get the community behind them to say this is a fight for the soul of public education, that this is a fight for public welfare, and they were remarkably successful. Of course, they also didn't solve the problem because there were so many schools that were closed nonetheless, because the mayor has the power to do that. And so this current strike is also saying that you know, we have to, that they're trying to fight for more positions in the school system through a strike. And, you know, they are trying to get unity around fighting for the arts and education as part of the schools. And that's something that parents might agree with, more librarians, more nurses, so that it becomes more than about pay, but about the provision of the public welfare through the schools. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether that's going to work this time, but it certainly worked in 2012.
Rosemary, I'm interested. You mentioned earlier the community involvement in this, community support of labor issues. In Chicago, it feels like there is waning community support because of the way our finances are here in Chicago. A lot of people have complained that a pay raise that was offered to the teachers seemed to be adequate given our financial situation. But in the General Motors strike, people see the profits that GM was making, and they're sort of on the side of those striking workers. Talk to us a little bit about how important getting the community on board with your labor action is.
Right, and I think there's a lot of sympathy for the GM workers because, you know, they've been told for years that, you know, they're supposed to sacrifice for the company to make it healthy. And what you see is the more that GM just keeps taking, in this case, it's you know, young workers being really feeling assaulted by a situation in which they're forced to be called temporary workers when they're actually working full time. That just means, you know, cutting their pay. So you know, they want to, there's that struggle there, and people can relate to that. I mean, a lot of people in this country are struggling with being designated as temporary or part-time or contract workers, so they can relate to that issue. Historically, that is what really built the labor movement, is to have the community on the side, and GM was the primary company that was, you know, largest corporation in the country in the 1930s that was organized. And they did it exactly that way, by building community support, the union did. You know, when they went on sit-downs and so forth, it was very controversial, though. So similar, you know, it's not that there's some rosy period in the past that all the community gets behind unions. There's always been an anti-union you know, agenda at the top that makes striking suspect. So no strike is easy, but in this case, it's been after years and years of people hearing from the corporate elite that, you know, if they just give us all that power, things will get better in this country. And I think a lot of people see that's just been a lie, that it doesn't get better, and that unions did build the middle class in this country, and really transform power in the country in the past, and we may be headed for another era in which we see more of this kind of activity by workers because there's just nothing else that's left. Both parties have effectively failed to, you know, gain benefits for workers just by voting for the right person. You know, that's what the message of unions was for years. We just need to vote the Democratic Party in, and things will get better. And, you know, that didn't happen. It just hasn't been the way it's historically happened.
Right. We have about a minute left. I want to get your thoughts on sort of that thread. With income inequality at its greatest in a long while in the U.S., do you think that'll fuel what you're talking about there, sort of that resurgence of the labor movement?
Yeah, I don't, I ask people to think about that. How else do you get the power? What is there? Is just working harder? We've seen that that hasn't happened. The more you work, the more it functions to, to provide money for the people at the top. So historically, that's what the labor movement did in the 19th century, in the 1930s. And, we've just seen the end, I think, of any kind of notion that the rich will somehow give back as a result of that. And this is worldwide, and this agenda from the top is worldwide, and there's got to be some mechanism through which people fight back. Historically, that has been the labor movement. striking, Mother Jones, which you mentioned, I'm interested. She always said the streets is where we will win, and so people have to be willing to go out and make their workplace voices heard, and that is by withholding their labor. And I think we'll see that this new trend, we'll have to see if that happens in this new trend in labor to basically use the strike as a weapon to address inequality.
All right. Rosemary, thank you very much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Rosemary Fuhrer, Associate Professor of History at Northern Illinois University.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. It is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month for all of us that connect in some way on the Internet. Some key tips for keeping not only you and your kids safe, but your information safe as well. Joining us this morning is Kelvin Coleman, Executive Director of the National Cybersecurity Alliance. Kelvin, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Great to be with you.
The theme this year is own it, secure it, protect it. Three important things that we should probably start doing right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, this year's theme really puts an emphasis on personal accountability. And with those three topics, own it, secure it, protect it, it puts it squarely on the individual to do just those things, right? And obviously within each of those topics, you have certain tactics, certain subsets of things you can do to protect yourself and your family.
It feels a lot, Kelvin, like some of this, a good deal of this is out of our control, whether it's a security breach that we're a victim of or somebody sharing our private information. I know that, and we'll go through some of the key steps here that we can do to start protecting ourselves, but am I alone in feeling that way?
No, well, that is a thought that some people have, but, I sometimes like to compare it to you driving on the road, right? There are certain things within your control that you can do to help protect yourself and those around you. Sometimes you can't account for other drivers, but as far as you can do, there are certain things. And certainly within technology, the same principle applies. Certainly there are rogue actors out there, bad actors who want to do damaging things, but you become a much less of an attractive target if you're able to do some simple things that can, again, help you stay safe and secure while navigating technology or being online. So no, you know, there are certain things that you could do to help control that, so that you can feel like you do have some semblance of control over your own information.
I know a lot of the cybersecurity awareness that we're going to talk about here is in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security, which has been involved in this. I know they've been involved in a number of different areas, securing our elections and doing some other things as well. You mentioned those threat actors. I'm curious, are we making any progress in not only finding all of those threat actors, but keeping them at bay?
We are actually not in my lane, at least not in my current role, sort of did that in my previous role with the government, but we're making tremendous progress. And I'll tell you just one simple thing, one piece of evidence for that is that we're talking, right? Federal government is partnering with state and local governments to really look at this issue and come up with some solutions for it. And so if nothing else, they've been able to really partner and been able to come up with some solutions to mitigate some of the challenges that come across during the election season and on the election system. So yes, I would say a tremendous amount of progress has been made with the cybersecurity and infrastructure security agency, CISA, there at the Department of Homeland Security. They're just doing a wonderful job of bringing everyone together to talk about and implement these solutions.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that we can start doing today with cybersecurity. What would be the number one thing you would start with this morning? Would it be making sure you have a safe password? Is that probably the chief among the tips?
So first and foremost, taking an inventory of what you have on hand. Right, I think identify is perhaps the first thing I would advise people to do. Average American owns 7 devices these days, Steve, and next year we know that about 32 billion, that's what it be, billion devices will be connected in some way to the Internet of Things, and so that's a lot of devices out there that will be connected to the network. So taking an inventory of what you have and what information you want to protect, looking at your apps, looking at the various programs that you have running, what do you need? You know, what don't you use anymore? Things of that nature. So identifying is very important in before you do anything else. And, of course, after that, yes, we do advise in terms of making sure you have robust and unique passphrases, right? Making sure that you're patching your machine. In other words, I think we've all seen where that pop-up comes up that says, hey, you know, I have an update for the software. You would do it now or you do it later. And most of us will hit that later button because we're in the middle of something. We can't be disturbed at that particular time. But we're encouraging people to do it now, right? Update your system and your browser now, software now. And so those two things alone, right, in terms of creating unique and strong passphrases and patching your computer, in addition to taking an inventory or identifying what you have, are some really good steps to helping to secure your information.
I've noticed over the last, especially the last year, that more and more of the places I go to for email and banking, social media, they're pushing multi-factor authentication. Either use your login and a phone number, or they send you a code. How important is that multi-factor?
Very important, Steve. In fact, that's a part of our own it, secure it, protect it. When you're able to use multi-factor authentication, that's an extra layer of protection or security that you will have. Now, none of these things that we're talking about, right, foolproof. We don't have any sort of foolproof silver bullet that will solve it all. But, when we talk about doing things like enabling multi-factor authentication, that can take you a long way down the road, again, of being less of an attractive target to the bad actors. So whenever possible, yes, we tell people to use multi-factor authentication. In fact, most of the interfaces we have with our devices, with our computers, with websites, allow you to do that, and it really does help you out a great deal in, again, creating that extra layer of security. It may take another second or two, but, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure in this particular day and age, and so taking that second or two to protect yourself, I think, is an absolute needed step that we recommend today.
If you connect it, you must protect it is a good phrase to remember. I like that. And you mentioned the Internet of Things. I recently hooked up a new thermostat in my house to Wi-Fi, and it required a new password. Those are things like that we don't think of needing to protect, but it's important, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, Steve. Again, when you talk about the Internet of Things, you're talking about, you know, your smart device, your smartphone controlling many aspects of your life, right? Your thermostat, security, you know, many people have their appliances hooked up to their phones. In fact, the most technological thing that most people have in their possession is actually probably their car, right? If they've purchased a, you know, 2018, 2019 car, cars today are merely computers with four wheels, right? And so when we talk about the Internet of Things, when we talk about all of these various aspects of our lives that are ran through our smart devices or through the Internet of Things, it's absolutely astonishing. Now, I will say it creates a tremendous amount of convenience, which is great. But to your point where you had to put in that password, that's what we advise people to do, to make sure that you and your family agree upon some great passphrase that everyone can remember in the family, but make it very, very difficult for a bad actor to guess, because once they're able to get into, you know, any of those applications that you're using, they can create havoc from there in getting to in other things that you don't want them to get into.
One of the things that I think we're just scratching the surface of, and I know this has been in the news a lot lately, is this notion that we've actually let some bad actors into our lives without even knowing it. The apps that we've downloaded onto our phones or mobile devices could be doing things in the background that we really don't want them to be doing. That's another layer of this, isn't it?
Well, two different things there, right? When we talk about letting bad actors in and we don't, we haven't, we don't necessarily know, right? Obviously, we don't want that. That may generally come from a phishing attack where you get an email with a link and you're clicking on that email and you're not really understanding who it came from or why it came. We advise people, if you don't know it, then don't open it, right? In fact, you can easily verify with the sender, hey, did you actually send this to me? If it looks suspicious, it probably is something that's bad. So that is one thing in a way that bad actors can get into your system. And when we talk about the apps, it's a little different that they are sometimes doing things in the background, like surveying your location or continuously updating where you are. We tell people, you know, to go in and you can disable that, right? All the apps will allow you to say, hey, no, I don't want you to follow me at this particular time to recommend, I don't know, a restaurant or a gas station, or, hey, you're near this studio, the yoga studio. No, you want to disable those things so that you're not being tracked or followed through the app. So we are talking about two different things there. One, the bad actors, they can get in through, again, phishing attacks by sending you a malware in a link. But the apps themselves running in the background, somewhat harmless in terms of what they're trying to do. But if you don't want anybody following you in that particular way, you should disable that.
Yeah, we have a pretty robust IT department here at WGN, and over the last year we've been getting a phishing attack tests of all of us. So we'll get an email that looks pretty good, like it's something that we should be clicking on with the company. And when we click on it, the company says, we got you. Don't do this because it's a phishing attack. It's very easy to be fooled by these things these days.
It really is, and I think, kudos to your company, because training and awareness is a big piece of this. It really is. It's not unlike training for fire drill, which we all grew up doing, or unfortunately in today's world, particularly in schools, active shooter drill. Depending on where you stay in the country, you may know the tornado drill or the hurricane drill. It's the same way with technology. Training and awareness, practice, knowing, having a plan and knowing that, you know, you know how to handle these things. And so now you're a bit more, probably a lot more, secure in terms of trying to identify a suspicious email. So, again, kudos to you all for even going through that, because oftentimes we have to convince organizations to do that, right, to train the employees to look for these things. Again, I'll go back to the ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You have to know that doing these small steps in the beginning can really save you a ton of heartache in the end. So training and awareness, really a key aspect to this.
Yeah, and what we've been talking about this morning, do it for yourself and then do it for your kids and make theirs even stronger.
Absolutely, particularly for children, right? Because they are, they were born with technology around them and use it so carefree. We have to remind them, though, that you have to be secure when you use these things. My very own children, I have to often remind them to make sure they're using their passwords and make sure that they are not sharing their passwords with anyone. Make sure they're updating their computer. So we talk about it as a family, right? And to your point about, making sure you're helping kids, just like you would talk to them about anything else, stranger danger on the street or some physical potential physical danger. You talk to them in the same way about technology. It's all about communicating. And that is a form of training and awareness, right? Just on the family level, to give you a little bit more comfort when using technology.
Kelvin, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Thanks for all of the advice and analysis. We thank you for getting up and joining us.
Oh, I can't thank you enough. Love the folks there in Chicagoland, and look forward to getting there soon to see you guys in person.
All right, Kelvin, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Kelvin Coleman, Executive Director of the National Cybersecurity Alliance, National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. You can find them online at staysafeonline.org with some more tips to keep yourself and your kids safe for Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. Dow futures down 175 points now, more than a half a percent. Also a negative day in Europe. Markets in Germany moving even further into the red, off nearly a percent. A generally positive day in Asia. Now agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look at some of the numbers in that weekly harvest report issued by the Department of Agriculture yesterday, soybeans harvested 14% as of Sunday night. Five-year average is 34%, so we're running quite a ways behind the average. Illinois with 11% harvested, normally 40%. Indiana with 19%. Normally, they'd have 33% harvested. And Iowa with only 5% of the soybean crop harvested. Normally, they would have 26% harvested by this date. Good to excellent category, down just a little bit in the soybean crop from last week. It was 55% good to excellent last week, but this week it's 53%. Have a great day, Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, October the 8th. The Small Business Optimism Index for September leads off today's economic reports. Analysts expect to see the index rebound slightly after retreating in August. The September producer price index is also out today. Economists are forecasting producer prices staying pretty close to the level in August, increasing by nearly 0.2%. Also today, we'll get a look at the Red Book. A couple of Fed speakers out as well, including Charles Evans from Chicago. Jerome Powell has a speech scheduled for today. Neil Kashkari also out speaking on monetary policy. And on the earnings calendar, we'll get quarterly earnings today from Domino's Pizza, Helen of Troy Limited, Triology Metals, Qatar National Bank, National Bank of Kuwait, and United Electronics Company, all reporting quarterly earnings today. So plenty of things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, October the 8th.